Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Driving More Show. Hi, I'm Paul and I'll be your host this evening. And what are we talking about today? Well, the topic or the title is, when is an upset not, was it really a surprise? Or something along those sort of lines. Because look, we've had it in the media that the All Blacks lost to the Ireland was an upset. But as Boa and I will chat, well, I'm not so sure that we necessarily agree with them. But hey, it makes a good headline. And who wants to let facts get in the way of things, eh? Other things we'll have a chat about tonight. Obviously, the other internationals from the weekend. We'll talk about the Super Rugby Pacific draw that's come out. World Rugby has also announced the nominees for its annual awards as well, which has definitely led to some head scratching with some of the decisions that have been made. Good evening to Simon, who is joining us in the live chat, and good evening to Boa. How are you doing, sir?
A very good evening and a very warm welcome to everyone, particularly our regulars who join us on the show, our diehard fans. Yeah, well, in Dublin or in Ireland, as they say, never let a good pint of Guinness get in the way of the facts. So, yeah, there's lots to debate and lots to dissect. And, yeah, look, very, very interesting, interesting weekend of rugby, more so for the results, as well as, you know, what some key talking points, particularly around TMOs and what they can and can't do. And of course, we saw some, I thought, some really brilliant individual tries as well as some really well-constructed tries as well. So all in all, let's get really stuck into it and lots to sink our teeth into.
There are lots to sink our teeth into, but before we do that, don't forget you can always get in touch with me at DrivingMall on Twitter if you want to have a chat. Also, we are live at 8 p.m. on Tuesdays. That's right, New Zealand time. So do check us out. Don't forget you can watch us on Facebook, YouTube and Twitter. And you can join in the live chat on YouTube and Facebook. Twitter, unfortunately, doesn't allow that anymore. If you missed the show, obviously those recordings are available. But also we put out the audio as a podcast so you can listen to us on your commute to work while you're doing the cutting the grass or anything else around the house, really. Or going for a run, you know, at the gym, listen to our dulcet tones. To energize you. So that's all how you can get to us. If you'd like to support New Zealand Sport Radio, head over to patreon.com/NZSportRadio and you can help us get all this fancy tech that we need to be able to bring you these shows. So let's crack on and let's quickly run through the women's results, women's international results from the weekends. I'll be honest, I've not seen many of these games, but the Ireland beat the USA 20-10, which I think is a bit of an upset, actually, for that margin of victory. Look, Ireland have had some real issues this year And if I've been listening to the Harping on Rugby podcast, which is a Leinster supporters podcast that talks about Irish rugby in general. When you have the AIL men's all the way down having referees, whereas the AIL women's league has to provide their own referee, they don't actually provide neutral referees, which is just nuts. They've had other things such as the changing tents put up next to the bins one of the games, for one of the interprovincial games. It's all been a bit of a mess over there, whereas women, the USA are one of the top teams, or historically one of the top teams in women's rugby. So, a great result there for Ireland, Bo.
Yeah, particularly after Ireland's disastrous exit from the World Cup qualification. It is a bit of an upset, and particularly in the USA, there's a very good collegiate level, or what we call an NCAA level involvement for women's rugby. So, look, great result for the Irish women, and I think this might be the start of a bit of a rebuild, more so off the field than on field, because you know we know that they have the talent, they have they had the results to prove it as well. So the USA women probably feeling a little bit down and disappointed with this result. But all in all, I think it's a great result for world rugby as far as the women's game goes. So well done, Ireland. And hey, they got the double, both men's and women's, this weekend.
Yeah, look, I mean, the Irish women's team beat the Black Ferns before the Irish men's team beat the All Blacks. So look, they've been on a slide since then, when they did well at the Rugby World Cup a few years ago. Wales beat South Africa 29-19. Look, at the main thing here is it's great to see South Africa touring. For Wales, they've got some new contracts. Nigel Walker over there at the WIU is heading things in the right direction. France beat New Zealand 38-13. I don't think that was really a surprise at all. Just goes to show that the England and France really have marched ahead of everybody else in world rugby. Boa, I'm not sure that Super Rugby Alpaca is going to be enough to close the gap.
No, not at all, because Test rugby at any level, both men's or women's, is, you know, it's that next step up. Everything is that much faster. The contact is that much more intense. The skill level is that much more sharper. So when you're playing a regional competition, you know, you're probably stepping down a couple of rungs. Look, no surprises. The French women were fancied and favoured. I'm a little bit surprised at the winning margin. I was expecting a far more closer game, because obviously the Black Ferns have had a couple of games, albeit a couple of hotter runs, to get some run-on form back in their whole situation as far as a touring side goes. So this is, I think there's reason to be concerned. There'll be some alarm bells going. So they'll have to figure out a way on how they can actually come up with a suitable preparation plan. And they're going to have to try and jam-pack everything in so that they can actually lift their skill level and ability to execute, particularly at the test level. So with the Aupaki, I think we will really need to start looking at how players perform and what is actually expected of them, and what is it that the entire competition, what the Black Ferns from a representative level, what their expectations are. And some of the players who will be involved in this, obviously, they're going to have to put their hand up as far as certain skills and skill sets are concerned. So it's going to be a very interesting time. It's going to be a massive challenge. I think there'll be some serious alarm bells going at headquarters at NZR as far as the women's game goes. So it's going to be a tough old time. And I guess the proof is it's going to be in the pudding. And, defending world champions, the Black Ferns. So, yes, huge, huge pressure on them.
Absolutely. The reason I say that, Pacquiao, I think it's going to be enough, is that it's only a four-week competition. But whereas the French and the English girls have a full season. England continued their good form, 51-12 win over Canada, another team that historically has been very good at this level, but showing you the difference between being professional and amateur, essentially. And then the final game, Scotland beating Japan 36-12. Again, The main thing here is great to see Japan actually touring and getting these games in. So great to see Japan and South Africa. And that basically, the number of internationals is increasing, which is only good. Some question marks, though, I would have around the women's game is, we know that the men's game is not financially stable. We know it's also not player welfare stable or sustainable either. It is stable, but it's not sustainable. We know that and yet the way we're building out the women's game is copying the men's game and putting it on at the same time. So competing with the men's game, pardon me, which to me seems nuts. That you take a structure you know isn't financially viable, isn't sustainable on the body, and then you just build up the exact same thing. The Women's Six Nations happens on the same weekend as the Men's Six Nations. The November Internationals, it's the same window for men and women. And then you look at their seasons. When is Super Rugby Alpaki? Oh, during the same time as Super Rugby. When is the Premier 15s? The same time as the Vero Premiership. So just copying the exact same structure, I don't think is the right way forward for the women. But having professional leagues, having more internationals is definitely better for the game. I just think we need some more thinking outside the box on this one.
Yeah, no question. I think because if you keep doing the same thing, you're going to get the same result. So trying to do a Me Too and copy what the men are doing is not going to get the desired result. So I think there needs to be more creativity as far as how the game is developed and how the game is perceived by a fan base, where you can actually simplify. And also, you know, the venues, the times, probably taking it to smaller venues where the atmosphere is going to be better. Some of these, boutique-like stadiums and esplanades. And, you know, getting fans more access and accessibility to these teams. So there's a whole raft of ideas. I got a number of ideas, particularly on the game development side of things, where we actually simplify the rules and make it more attractive so that you actually see more running rugby and more points. And that will give the opportunity for laymen or people who don't know anything about rugby to actually take one glimpse and say, oh, no, it's fast, it's open. It's about basically picking up the ball and scoring tries. So I think that's...
Please stop talking common sense. You're not a white old age guy with a blazer, so therefore you're not allowed to say. It's as simple as that. Again, I don't wear my blazer. I'm not one of part of the in crowd. I'm not allowed to say either. So yeah, that's we whilst we might talk common sense, we might agree. Yeah, take it to small grounds, which is exactly what England did against the Black Ferns. Got 10,000 down in Exeter, and then they got 12,000 up in Northampton for those games. Pretty much nearly sold out stadiums. You get a great atmosphere if you do that. You take it to an 80,000 seater stadium at Twickenham and have 10,000 in there, and it's not a good atmosphere at all. And you're not going to be growing the game. So, a lot of the things you're saying, very true. I mean, simplifying the rules. Whoa, what make the game understandable for people? Look, even the players don't understand what the referee is calling. and they're supposed to be professionals who play this, who train all the time. Think different. Unfortunately, that's not the rugby way, as we've seen for the past 100
Paul,
years.
Paul, one of the easiest things the women's game or any women's sport can do is geographically, particularly in England, there'll be certain geographic locations where women's and girls' sport or all types of sport are quite prevalent, because through participation numbers. And those are the areas you need to really target. And you take it to a place where there's accessibility, probably open gate, the turnstiles are free, and you simplify the game. And this is something I've been harping on, particularly in my capacity as a World Rugby educator and trainer, where, you know, you simplify things around the scrum, around the ruck, you try to make it faster, you try and make even possibly the game shorter, where you have four quarters and you actually speed things up and you give people an opportunity to actually understand in a very simple way what rugby is and give them clarity. So therefore, it becomes a more spectator-friendly sport. But like you said, you know, what I'm saying is not really rocket science. It's just common sense. You could use this in any sporting arena. I see this a lot in some progressive sports like basketball, particularly in the half court 3x3. And that's why it's one of the world's fastest growing sports. If you look at MMA, it's the same thing, you know. You throw two fighters in an octagon, and the person who gets beat up the most loses. It's pretty simple. So we can go on for hours, but I hope all the viewers out there, they kind of get the gist of what I'm trying to get.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, a lot of the pieces that make up the MMA have obviously been part of the Olympics for ages, in taekwondo and. I've got the other martial art that's at the Olympics, and obviously there are a number of other martial arts. But again, the scoring and the rules are just way over the head of the casual fan. And as you say, simplify it down. Which person isn't standing up at the end? There you go. That's your winner. That's what MMA has done, as you say. Now they've increasingly had to put rules in. But most of those are technical rules that the fighters know about and avoid, but doesn't alter the understanding for the casual fan. But hey, we should move on. We've got another weekend of women's rugby to come, so it's been good so far. It's a step forward. It's heading the right direction. It could be heading in an even better direction. Moving on, then we should looking at the men's internationals. Now, folks, we're going to talk. Obviously, we'll kick off with the All Blacks versus Ireland. Now, we are a New Zealand-based rugby show, hence we will probably be talking mostly about the All Blacks from here on and what they should have done or what they shouldn't have done. What that doesn't alter is that Ireland were the better team and they deservedly won. So, just because we talk more about the All Blacks, folks, don't take that as in any way degrading the result here. Ireland were better on the day, and they fully deserved their win, didn't they, Bob?
Well, absolutely. I don't think any team in world rugby would have beaten that Irish team on that day. Just the sheer speed, the passion. And I think they'd really prepared for this particular game. And there's an element of, you know, absolute desperation in everything they did, and they came full throttle at the All Blacks. And to the All Blacks' credit, I also, you know, we have to give them their dues. Really, they should have been absolutely pumped by 50 points looking at the statistics, but that didn't happen. And they put a stellar defensive effort. But look, Ireland were the better team on the day. They were more hungrier, they were more desperate, and of course they played the game the way it's meant to be. It was a great advertisement for the sport. So by no means should the result be taken as a shock, horror, surprise. It isn't. And if you actually look at the pure statistical side of it, you know, it's an alternate win-loss record for the last four, and that qualifies now to be what I would call a proper statistical pattern. So the good news with All Blacks is, if we look back on that, on the return game, I think we know what's coming. And the All Blacks would feel a bit embarrassed because, you know, they got shunted out. One thing I do have to say is, All Blacks have sort of been a victim of their own strategy or tactics of having these wholesale changes. Because, you know, if you go right back to the rugby championship, when we were having these discussions, I've been a big advocate of balancing the changes where you have the right amount of experience. Having wholesale changes week in, week out does not give an opportunity at test level. You have to understand, this is not regional NPC or super rugby. This is test level. So you have to expect test level opposition. And you can't just rock up on the day and just do your thing. It's never going to work. And I think, by and large, because we all know the All Blacks, they have the skill set, they have the ability. And we saw the same situation last year where, you know, we have all these wholesale changes and they turn up a bit lethargic. They look a little bit sleepy. They play for keeps. They turn up not to lose and they eventually pay the price. So there's a lot of learnings to be had. But well done, Ireland. Fantastic. And more than anything, really, really enjoyed the way they played. And I think it was a great advertisement for Test rugby.
I'll disagree on one thing. I'm not sure. I don't think the All Blacks necessarily looked lethargic. And as I said, I don't think we can put this result down to their performance. It was the result was down to Ireland's performance and pressurising New Zealand into mistakes. Now, and I think that's what I saw an article that was on The Roar, actually, where a guy, again, talks about, he's a Kiwi, so he writes about the New Zealand point of view. And as far as he says, is, look, essentially, and it's a term we've heard for a long time now, he says, look, New Zealand has not been earning the rights to go wide, and we've had too many flash players and not enough earning players for this one. He takes this all the way back to Chicago, where Jerome Kano was put in the second row. And let's be honest, Jerome Kano, fantastic six, but he's not a second row. So I think this isn't a one-off thing. This isn't a Foster thing. This is something that's been going on for about 6 years now, where because I remember sitting at Eden Park and for the New Zealand-Wales game, when Wales toured here before the Lions, and people then saying, look, we're not earning the right to go wide. Now, so on that one, is this a long-term tactical issue, I think, rather than a lethargic or changing issue just for this one game?
Well, yes, it is a long-term tactical issue in the sense of, you know, picking players one out of position and having too many changes, tinkering with lineups on a very regular basis. You're having 19 to 20 changes coming in, and you're having 7 to 8 different starting combinations in your, you know, first five and halfback. And, you know, you can't get what I would call decent, acceptable 95% confidence into. I'm just going to get a bit statistical here. What I would call 95% confidence in your run-on form. And that's what is causing most of these issues in the All Black camp. And of course, the other side of the coin is, with the changes in the game and with the way the game is supposed to be policed. Now, I stressed on the word supposed to be policed. I fully understand what the All Blacks are trying to do. They're trying to commit lesser numbers to the breakdown, and they're trying to speed the game up. Now, over the last couple of years, World Rugby have put an enormous amount of effort by tinkering pretty much every 6 months with the rules to speed up the game. But what actually happened, in more ways than one, the game is now, when I mean slower, the game is being slowed down, particularly around the breakdown. Now, one of the key pointers I need to highlight is, particularly in Super Rugby, you can clearly see how the breakdown is contested, where there's what you call zero ruck or no contest. The game is policed in a certain way. But soon as you start playing sides from the Northern Hemisphere, particularly at Tessel, you can see how fierce the ruck is being contested. So this is one tactical area we are actually falling back. And this is an area which needs to be addressed. And also when we ruck, you can see, because we're used to playing against sides who play the zero ruck or don't contest the breakdown, the body positions are quite passive and upright. And we are now prone to the counter ruck. So again, from a coaching point of view and tactical point of view, these are things which need to be addressed. However, if you do look at some of the counter rucks, 9 times out of 10, the opponents, they seem to be leaving their feet. Now, the rule, the letter of the law, as soon as you leave your feet, you take no further part in the game. But because that is not being policed, and, you know, all credit to the teams who get away with it, they seem to be getting away with it. And these are some of the little gray areas where actually losing, and losing quite consistently. So there's no real point in persisting with a tactical plan where we are being very passive at the ruck. And to make matters worse, by constantly tinkering and changing lineups, it's just facilitating the demise. So I think these are the two key areas. If we have a proper squad of 23 players where we have minimal changes, and I'm talking 4 to 5 changes so that we build depth, as opposed to 19 to 20, and play 6 to 7 test matches, I think we can get over this situation very, very comfortably.
Yeah, I know. Effectively, he's been playing a dirt trackers team for the USA and Italy game, and then a first choice team for Wales, Ireland, France, which I don't actually have anything wrong with that per se. What I would say, though, is that we're at a different level, a different stage of development to some of the other sides, such as Ireland South Africa, for example. Now, South Africa, you and I can sit down and say, okay, if everyone's fit, who will they start with as a starting 23? And we'll get probably 20 out of the 23 correct, because we know, it's well known who their first choices are on every settled side. If you'd asked us prior to the South Africa games in the Rugby Championship, who is the All Blacks starting, the first choice 23? And I think you'd have sat down with three or four experts and got three or four versions, because it just wasn't nailed on as to what that starting 23 is. What we are seeing to a certain degree now is that we are seeing some settled over the two Springbok games, then Wales, Ireland and France. It has become, we'll have to wait and see until we see France, actually, to be honest. But over those four games, it has become, we have seen what I think now what Ian Foster thinks his first choice 23 is. But it's been very late in coming. And as you say, so it hasn't settled down. Now, one argument is, hey, it doesn't have to settle down until 2023. Well, we'll see about that on that one. I was going to bring Con in, who's joined us. How are you doing, sir?
How you doing, guys? Very well.
Oh, sun's out, guns out, hey?
Yeah, I'm pulling a boa from the weekend, actually. We swapped clothes. No, sorry, I'm just doing some mopping, and it's quite hot, so in my mum's house. So anyway.
Boa started us off with a warm welcome. I thought he was going to talk about the warm weather, but there we go. Sorry.
I'm just going to say, I think on the point I just heard you mention about, you know, the All Blacks don't necessarily need to be settled in their team and everything like that. All I'd say to that is, it's certainly not the All Black way, well, as a fan, to be willing to lose games between World Cups to win a World Cup. And I think it's really, it's an excuse. That's an excuse. Anyone that says that has just lost a game. You know, I'm talking about other coaches and that kind of thing. Some people do put more emphasis on it. But the reality is, you know, we want to win every game. And traditionally, the All Blacks, recent times, and we may look back on the era of the early 2010s to late 2010s as the glory years, because they probably are and were. But even historically, we've put everything in. We've done very, very well between World Cups. That was actually the problem prior to that. It was, we do really well between World Cups and fail at the Cup. So I think the All Blacks need depth, and they should be changing, and traditionally we still have been able to win based on that, and I think that's what the fans expect, and I think we shouldn't let that expectation drop.
I totally agree. And on that note, look, I mean, Ireland looked fantastic about a year and a half to 2 years out from the World Cup last time, and then came up short in 2019. They've looked great over these last two games with Andy Farrell, the new head coach there, obviously taking over from Joe Smith, who has just joined the Blues. One of the things I think they'll be preying on for Ireland is that this is not a similar thing as happened in the last World Cup cycle, where, yeah, as you say, they peaked a year or two out from the Rugby World Cup. But look, I'm not wishing that on Ireland at all. It's overdue them making a semi-final. Wouldn't be surprised to see them doing it in 2023.
Although they have a very difficult run. So their pool is South Africa and Scotland. So they have a pool of death. And we know now there are more than one pool of death due to Japan, hopefully still being good. And the teams that they face, first and second, New Zealand, likely New Zealand and France. So that's a tough path for Ireland, to be fair. As in, you know, if they do beat South Africa and beat Scotland, then they likely will face either New Zealand or France. And if they lose to one of them, they're likely going to face New Zealand or France. And that's, they're going to be two very good teams. So I feel for them.
Yep.
Yeah, gentlemen, I'm just going to respond to what Nocturnal says on the chat. And he says, you know, this is close to being our very best set. Yeah, that's right. It was, you know, the best available set. But the reality is you can't just pick your best side 1 week, and the week prior you have wholesale changes, and walk into a game in Dublin against a side like Ireland and expect to just win. We just don't have the relevant experience and that age bracket of players. And you know, our senior heads like Sam Whitelock, your Borden Barretts, we don't have enough of them in this particular squad because we're still finding our players. So the reality is, you know, it's a question of, are the All Blacks going to make wholesale changes, which looks like that's what they're going to do until they, you know, find their feet? And is the rugby public in New Zealand willing to be understanding enough and forgiving that, yes, they will drop some games along the way trying to build depth and run on form or exposed form, getting minutes for these players in an off year? But the reality is, whenever the All Blacks play, the expectation is that they have to win every game and win by about 100 points. Every time they touch the ball, they have to score a try. And we know in Test club, that's not going to happen all the time. And that's what we're experiencing now. So this is the perfect cocktail for, you know, Ian Foster and his guys, their demise. And one of the key elements of Ian Foster's coaching or criticisms of his coaching is that there's not enough innovation. So You factor all these things in. It really depends on which side you subscribe to. There's less than 5% of all rugby fans in New Zealand who subscribe to saying, yeah, actually, we understand what they're trying to do. Let's let them do what they're doing and we back their tactics. Every single time the guys in black shirts run out, they expect a good, solid victory, regardless of who turns up on the day.
Yeah, look, I'll be honest, I've not read much in the papers or the media. I generally don't, but the general feel I've got just from scanning social media is that people aren't as upset with Ian Foster as I thought they would have been with a loss, to be blunt. I thought we'd see much more uproar, much more calling for his head. So a bit surprised by that, that there hasn't been a calling for him to get replaced by Razor. Maybe people have just given up shouting that because they know it's just not going to happen. But I thought we'd get more of that uproar. Interesting point here by
international
AK,
media. Sorry. Go ahead, mate. You continue, and I'll say that list.
All right. So, AK, not impressed with Brad Moore so far. The attack is so predictable. No subtlety or innovation whatsoever that you should learn from how Ireland attack. Now, that's a good point here. One of the things we've not talked about, one of the things not been talked about much at all, is, yes, you've got Farrell as the new head coach. But what's been the big turnaround for Ireland? Paul O'Connell coming in and working with the forwards has been... And as we said, the forwards really outplayed the All Blacks forwards. Hence, so that's his big point. Mike Katz coming in. Now, look, Farrell and Katz both got a lot of criticism, as did Stuart Lancaster, when they were part of the England setup in 2015. But all of them seem to have come through that and have shown that they are actually good coaches, with Stuart Lancaster at Leinster and now Andy Farrell and... Mike Catt with Ireland. So, interesting points, interesting things there around those sort of things. But sorry, go on, Com. You're going to say? Oops, I think it's frozen.
Yeah, look, if I can just jump in. With these attack patterns, you know, if you look at Super Rugby, every single side plays more or less the same attack patterns. It's either 1-3-3-1 or, you know, 2-2-2. You know, the pods are the same. You know, it's very, very predictable. So, and I don't know, maybe there's an element of these guys being overcoached so that they become so predictable and drab and they wait for that little moment where someone like Will Jordan will do a little chip and chase and put someone into space, which is essentially what happened against Ireland. Whereas if you look at Ireland or any of these other sides, whenever they've beaten the All Blacks, they've just thrown caution to the wind and just gone attack, attack, attack. It's what you call the unceasing wave. So from a tactical point of view, I think they will have to look at a different template because there's a large degree of predictability. But if the execution is on point, it's a different ballgame. Because if for all intents and purposes, this weekend, if the All Blacks turn up and, you know, and they have the potential to demolish France, then all of a sudden, all is forgotten and forgiven, and Ian Foster is back to be the greatest coach on earth. So it's you live by your sword, you die by your sword, and it's a week in, week out thing, and that just shows how much demand and actually how close things are, particularly between teams number 1 to 6.
Interesting thought. We need to move on from this game now, really. Let's run through some of the other results. Scotland 15, South Africa 30. I've not seen this one, but a lot of people impressed with Scotland in this one, and that South Africa took their chances and came out on top, whereas Scotland didn't, I think is pretty much what I kind of heard. You're shaking your head there, Bella.
I was so disappointed with Scotland because the previous week, the form line was fantastic, and for some reason, they just lost their head. And all South Africa had to do is basically wait for Scotland to make the mistake and they play their old-fashioned game. And it was actually very, very disappointing. There was a moment of genius there of Finn Russell. They play their predictable sort of brainless getting nowhere rugby. And then all of a sudden he switches direction and tries a cross kick. Absolute moment of genius. Set the field alight. For me, it was one of the highlights plays of the day. But I have to say, Scotland, they were their own worst enemy. And you know, great to South Africa. They didn't do anything different. They just stayed for the mistakes to happen, and Scotland gave them plenty of opportunities. And to be frank, it was a bit of an early Christmas gift. But well, in South Africa, they win again, and they just move forward.
Yep, they move forward. And up against England, this coming weekend, which should be an absolute a mighty clash. Even though England have lost a couple of players from this one. LB on the old old box, chip in the shoulder there, box so boring, the Pimpy scored such boring tries. I don't think that's quite what Boa said, but there we go. Moving on.
Well, let me tell you something. I was following, I was reading something on the Daily Telegraph. There's one instance where they described how the box walked into a lineout from a penalty as a very heavy glazier carrying excess overweight baggage. That's what they said. So now, this is not my words. Okay, this is not my words. Of course, it's the English media. But you sort of get the picture and you know, it works for them. And, you know, they get away with it. Good on them. But look, Mapimpi is a fantastic player. And he's anything but boring. And that's the whole point of this. When you have players like that, you can unleash them. But as far as Scotland, very, very disappointing. And I was tipping Scotland to go for the upset. The way, if they play rugby like this, they're not going to win a single game.
Moving on then, Italy lost to Argentina 16-37. So a good result for Argentina there, who, let's be honest, have been having a hard time of it recently. In that one, decent game against France and showing that actually they're coming into some form finally for them. Belgium lost to Canada 0-24. Now, Canada really needed that win, but apparently Belgium didn't have all of their players available in this one. But after losing to Portugal, that confidence was really needed for Canada. It doesn't get any easier for Tonga, mind you. They lost 42-17 to the French Barbarians, or what effectively is the French second team there, which I think shows you that look, France have got a lot of good players at the moment. When you think they toured to Australia with a whole bunch of players missing because of the French final, France has not only got good players but got good depth nowadays by the looks of things.
Certainly they do. And again, if you allow them to play their game, they are very, very dangerous, potent opponents. So it'll be very interesting to see this week. And I'm expecting a bit of a bounce back as well, because we see this pattern, don't we? The All Blacks have a bit of a miss and then they, you know, all of a sudden wake up and they get all angry and they decide to turn up and do the whole, you know, let's smash them in the ruck and then we see what happens. But No, look, this is and this is a bit of a psychological test as well, because first up, this is going to be the opening game for the next World Cup. But no, fantastic. I think it's very exciting. And I'd like to see more closer encounters or more exciting games to open the international calendar, as opposed to the All Blacks playing Tonga or a Tier 2 nation, because it really serves no purpose. And it's great to see. And I guess we'll all be looking forward to this weekend.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
France, the All Blacks will be a fantastic game. Portugal 25, Japan 38, another cracking game, another cracking. And as the reviewer says, Portugal nearly beats Japan. Again, I didn't follow this one, but look, I think Portugal, one of the a team that I think a lot of us really know very little about, and are suddenly this international window has really opened our eyes to them, with the beating Canada and then also having a decent game against Japan. So cracking, great to see that result. And then finally, England 32, Australia 15. In that one to finish things. Oh, sorry, we've got some more after this. England 32, Australia 15. Now, you're going to be down in Australia on this one and say, hey, this is typical Australia. To me, I think if you look at the number of players Australia are missing from the side that went on that winning run, when you think they've not got Karevi, Cooper there, they've brought in Skelton, Arnold into there. There's an awful lot of changes between that, and this is a very much a growing team within the with Australia. They just not got the depth. They can't have seven players missing, which is what I think something around that kind of number that they had from this game changes and expect to be competent and expect to be there. Look, they're missing Hodge and Banks, their first and second choice 15s. I think perhaps I was a little too overconfident with Australia coming into this series because of their record. What I didn't take into account is the amount of players I got missing on this tour. But...
Well, yes and no. But this, again, if you compare the two situations, I mean, if you take the depth factor out of it, both the All Blacks and the Wallabies, when you have constant tinkering with lineups, this is what happens. It's very difficult to get any continuity and consistency out of players. One thing I will be very critical of Wallabies is their tackle technique, and particularly the engagement and height. Everyone looks like a stick man or a popsicle going, running into contact. And that high shot on, I think it was Carl's, was it Sinclair or was it Jamie George? Sorry, that was a dead set red card. Tucking your arm underneath your hip and just jumping in the shoulder. And to make matters worse, there was no HIS. I thought I'd put that in there as well. And Lockie Swinton, that spear tackle, was very, very lucky that I think it was Itoje? I think he landed on his biceps. Fortunately, he stuck his arm out. Had he not, he would have, landed on his head and neck. Again, just really, really poor discipline. So at test level, you know, this sort of ill-discipline is really unacceptable. And for me, that's a real letdown. And it's a real coach killer as well. Yes, they're missing some players. Again, you know, off-field, they'll have this drama. So they're not going to get any consistent form if this sort of, you know, chopping and changing is allowed to happen. So I think that's really up to management and administration to sort it out. And I actually, believe it or not, I actually feel very sorry for the Wallabies that they have to deal with this.
But look, there are a number of them that have not been available due to Japan club commitments in Karevi, Cooper, Corabetti, and McMahon. But even McMahon didn't even play for them. Hey, McMahon, is that? I've got the right person? Not sure I have, actually. But there's one of them. There was a Lucy that wasn't available. But yeah, injuries have also been a part of it as well. There on that one, and then
Cooper and Karevi. Sorry, Paul. I think Cooper and Karevi had such a significant part in their wins against South Africa, and you know, for the All Blacks, if we lost our 9 and 10, we have the next, you know, batch coming through are very good. I think for Australia, it's just not the same. You know, Jock. James O'Connor, he did have a good year, but I think his lack of time is just, you know, it's just a real shame. Same with Ebara, I feel bad for them. I think the Australian public were probably pretty pumped about this tour, and if they did have those two players, it might have made it. I think they, you know, good chance of beating Scotland. That was a very close game. This English game, I'm doubtful. Personally, but you know, could have maybe.
Yeah, and look, one other thing I have to say and question is, I mean, with Cooper, I mean, is he really a long term solution? Because to me, it was just a band aid just to make sure that there's a, you know, gap stop. So from a high performance point of view and long term succession planning, I think it's sending the wrong message anyway. And of course, when you're starting to, you know, shoehorn players from overseas, I mean, we saw Kirtley Beale coming in. You know, it is going to, because on one hand, you're saying that we want to build a team culture of continuity. And then on the other hand, when you have all these, you know, drips and drabs happening, you have to start parachuting players in. So it's a bit of a conflict there. So for me, it's very, very difficult to actually build a winning culture. And it's a massive, massive challenge.
So you don't think that he has the legs to make it to the World Cup, Bill Cooper? He's not that old, is he? How old is he?
Oh, look, he could do. You know, there's lots of other old players such as Sexton trying to make it. So, look, he could make it there. It doesn't help that James O'Connor, yeah, he had a good Super Rugby season, but he's been injured for the past 4 months, right? And then he's straight back into the side. So, with no warm-up games, straight into international Tier 1 rugby, it's a bit of a mess. So, look, I think Australia in a bad place through injuries and unavailable players. They were trying to rest certain players and give the proper pre-seasons for next year as well. And yeah, this has become one of those tours where I think perhaps take it with a bit of a pinch of salt as to what we might see from the Wallabies come next year when they have their full deck of cards to choose from. Final two results in France beat Georgia 41-15 and Wales beat Fiji 38-23 in that one. So, any comments on those two games? Otherwise, we can we've got some Super Rugby schedules to talk about.
Well, Wales versus Fiji, I have to say there were some atrocious on-field calls, and the TMO came to the rescue of, surprise, surprise, Rassi Rasmus's favourite referee, Nick Berry. So it's really interesting how World Rugby always seem to be able to stage manage people back into the game. Look, guys, you know, there's to me, there's some really bad calls in that game. I think Fiji were, it felt like Fiji got stitched up to me. And the real highlight for me was when Fiji were down to 13, the try they scored. Oh my goodness, that was next level, you know. Just broken play, quick tap from a freak, from a fair catch, and they brought that sevens element. And I think, look, that's what the modern game is all about, and that's actually what World Rugby are trying to do. So, and in that instance, the key factor was the referee or the officials had nothing to do there. The players just played on and everyone just followed the play. So I really feel for Fiji, and the scoreline sort of flattered Wales. And of course, that stunning solo try from Reece Lightning, Lewis Reece Summit. Once upon a time, that wouldn't have been a try because, you know, there was really no control. And again, controversial in the sense most fans, particularly the online reaction, is that most people think it's not a try. So this, again, highlights the disjoint between what World Rugby's new set of rules are and the lack of the knowledge which is required to be ruling on that or understanding what the rule is from the rugby public. So this is just keeps going, getting worse and worse and worse. And thank God, the TMO was a little bit competent enough to save the on-field referee, Nick Perry. And I have to say that.
So that's last weekend. We've got the final weekend of internationals coming up. Italy versus Uruguay. This will only be interesting from the point of view is, can Uruguay beat Italy put more, add more ammunition to people saying that Italy don't deserve to be a tier one nation. Scotland-Japan, a rematch from the Rugby World Cup there with that one. Romania versus Tonga. Finally Tonga getting a good chance there. Georgia versus Fiji. The top European tier two nations against the Pacific Island tier two nations would be interesting. The first game I'll probably be getting up for is the 4:15 for England versus South Africa, which should be a cracking one. As LB has said in the live chat, he's looking forward to shutting up the English and particularly shutting up their head coach Eddie Jones. But we'll wait and see what happens there. Then at 6:30 we've got Wales versus Australia, and then finally at 9:00 France versus New Zealand. So three cracking games back to back there. Monday morning at 3:15 a.m. we've also got Ireland versus Argentina to round off the window with the Barbarians game coming up the weekend afterwards. Moving on then. We have had some Super Rugby fixtures announced for next year. 14 games over 15 weekends is the regular season with one weekend rest for each of them. Things, I guess, to discuss from this. First up, we have apparently got some innovation, boys, in that... we've got a super round in round two where all the games will be happening in Melbourne in three double headers over 3 days. What do you think of this idea of having all the games in one place for one weekend?
They tried to do it for the Trans-Tasman, the Super Rugby Trans-Tasman, didn't they? But they had to cancel it. So I think it was, it will be the first time they've done it. It won't be the first time they've tried to do it. But I just... wish they did it at a location that they were likely to get great crowds. I mean, is Melbourne really going to do that well with, you know, the huge number of Super Rugby supporters in Melbourne? I don't know. I haven't been there, so I'm not really sure. But it doesn't look that good when you're watching the Rebels play, that's for sure.
Bella, your thoughts?
Oh, look, I'm not a fan of it. I'll tell you why. It's just too long, and particularly when you're a TV viewer at home, And we know, you know, TMO interjections, the water breaks and medics and all this. It just drags on and on and on. So I think two games is actually quite, if you're a real student of the game, it's mentally quite challenging. So I'm a fan of one good, decent, short game. In and out. To me, it's just probably just dragging things on. Others may disagree. But
wouldn't it be the same, Boa, if... Sorry, it just cut in a little bit. Wouldn't it be the same, Boa, from a TV viewer? Because often it'll be in a similar time frame as other games. They tend to have them back-to-back in different locations. So I wouldn't be surprised if some TV viewers don't even realise. Because they're just watching a game, they'll have the break, they'll have the thing. And then they'll jump into the next one. They probably rotate the commentators a little bit because the commentators will fucking lose their voice after 2 days. So
yeah, I think for a TV, as you say, Con, for a TV viewer's point of view, I think there's not really much difference. Yeah, it is something that's going to happen there. So look, this is something that that happened in the Super League up in the UK. The NRL then adopted the idea and called it Magic Round. This is really this idea of calling it, look, when you're taking a good idea from somebody else, just admit it. You don't have to call it innovation. I'll be honest, I'm skeptical. So what I did was I got Richie from the Standoff show, our NRL show, to have a quick chat with him about how it's gone in NRL, whether it's a good idea. From the Standoff show, one of our NRL experts here on New Zealand Sport Radio. How are you going?
I'm going good, thanks, Paul. How about yourself?
Not bad at all. And we have Super Rugby Pacific coming up next year. And after copying the goal line dropout or dropout from under the post that the NRL do, and also the 50-22, we have a new innovative idea that comes straight from NRL, which is the Super Round. Now, you guys have what's been called the Magic Round since 2019, where all the games are in one place. I mean, what do the fans think of the concept in NRL?
Oh, look, I haven't, obviously, being based here, I haven't attended, so I can only go off what I see and the opinions of people in the league circles that I mix with online. And by all accounts, the fans love it, and the fans like to get along to it. I know that last year in 2021, it was reported that there was about 25,000 interstate visitors to the region into Brisbane where Magic Round was held. So going off that, you know, it seems as though the fans do enjoy it.
Okay, so there's no kind of upset that they're missing out on home games or anything, and that and having all in one place. That everyone's happy about that by the sounds of things. And so 25,000 people travelling, that's clearly good. And what kind of crowds do they get? And is it the same for all the games, or do people just turn up for the home game and ignore all the other ones?
Well, the numbers actually, if you look at the average attendance outside of Magic Round last year, the average per game was about 10,300 per game, or 83,000 across the whole round. When you look at the numbers for Magic Round, the total attendance across the whole weekend was 130,000, so 130,000 versus 83,000 for a normal round. That was at an average of about 43,000 per day across 3 days for Magic Round. So in terms of bums on seats, it's, you know, there's a bit of a spike there. And local economy likes it too. I mean, they reckon it brought in around $20 million into local economy as well. So going off those metrics, I think, you know, the rugby league circles and obviously Brisbane, Queensland area would consider it a success.
Yeah, and look, the Queensland government paid $2.1 million per year for the first 2 years of this. I'm sure during COVID it'd probably be a bit different. But yeah, so there is a money side of it as well as the fan side. But wow, by all accounts, it's a good thing. I'll be honest, I'm skeptical of the idea, but I guess we'll see. But so yeah, stealing a good idea from NRL. Thanks, Richie, and good luck with the Standoff show when you guys are back next season.
Thanks, mate. No worries.
So there we go. So apparently it is working in NRL. We'll see how it works in Super Rugby. Other things we've also got is a women's round, a culture round, and a heritage round. Now, the women's round is during March, which is when Super Rugby Aupaki is on. So I expect to see double headers in that round, and the Chiefs wearing their pink jersey. Culture round, I expect teams to be wearing Aboriginal and Maori designs on their jerseys. And Heritage Round, I'm expecting that means basically retro jerseys. But Con, you were hoping that it might be a bit more, might be a bit more to it than just wearing some jerseys. Whereas I'll be honest, I'm being cynical and thinking that it's a just a marketing thing to try and just get some more eyeballs on the TV and some fancy jerseys.
It could be. I mean, you know, you probably swayed me a little bit, to be fair. I expect I'll do a little bit more than the jerseys, but maybe the idea started as the jerseys and they'll have to fill it up a bit. What I mean by that is I expect what's the first one, Paul? What's the other one?
So we've got Women's Round, Culture Round, and Heritage Round.
Culture. Yeah, so maybe Culture, they'll do quite a bit in the pre-show and have some sort of tribute, cultural tributes and that kind of thing. I'd hoped it could have been something else, but I'm not sure what I'd hoped for, to be honest. I think with Heritage, I had said, you know, it would have been great if they'd, you know, taken the games to somewhere important in the region from a rugby heritage type thing at the grassroots level. I think you're right, it'll be vintage retro jerseys, which would be kind of more of amusing, I guess. It's I think the women in rugby, is that what it's called? Cool.
Something like that, yep.
Yeah, I think that one's probably the one where they'll do the most interesting, thing, which hopefully is, as you've suggested, curtain raiser, or a double header with the other super rugby, the women's super rugby, I forget the name, or something similar, maybe the depending on the schedule, which would be really cool. So hopefully they do something quite interesting, and I do have just some hopes that if they keep doing this, they take advantage of it and give people a reason to go beyond just looking at some new jerseys.
And the reviewer gave retro Crusaders, like they would do that now. Yeah, I think the Crusaders will perhaps put the old badge, but on a retro coloured kit rather than necessarily bringing the badge back per se. But there we go. Yes,
it'll be the big 90s jerseys. You know, the big baggy ones that they used to have. I particularly,
you have to play in cotton. You can't play in artificial fabrics. Brilliant.
Yeah, that's true. But the Crusaders in particular, I just recall, you know, Razor Robertson and, you know, a few of the other players just in these, Reuben Thorne in these big bloody jerseys that look, you know, you could swim in them. But they were quite cool, to be fair.
Yeah, very, very iconic jerseys. This was when Ubix were sponsoring Super Rugby. And the most iconic Crusader was Norm Berryman when he had his Canterbury black headgear and his man bun ponytail. It was sensational. I've actually got a whole collection of those, and I might actually wear it next week for the broadcast. One thing I have to say is with this whole culture thing, look, it's, you know, limiting it to 1 week, to me, it's just a marketing gimmick. They don't have to limit it to 1 week. They can incorporate this right throughout the competition, particularly given that we have Moana Pacifica and the Fijian Duru are both playing in, and they can incorporate this and, you know, get some innovation and get something novel on a weekly basis. And look, guys, I'm not being cynical here, but, you know, the marketing person in me says that, you know, it's just like that Tereo week where, you know, you go to Bunnings or Hardware Store and they talk Tereo for 1 week and then out it goes for the rest of the thing. To me, it's just get some extra dollars and just, you know, change the point of sale sort of thing. So, you know, use that heritage, you know, use the woman in rugby, use the family, use the whānau concept and you know, spread it right throughout the season. There's really no reason why we should just limit it to 1 week. It's kind of like on the National Geographic Channel where they have Black History Month. I mean, are you just going to keep it to 1 month? Just have it right throughout. So it's no different. It's the same concept. And to me, it's a bit of a marketing game.
You're right. Yeah, I think it's a bit of a marketing thing, but it does bring some awareness to it, etc. But look, as you say, there's no reason why it couldn't be spread out across the whole thing. Look, overall, we've got we've got the structure. There's every team in New Zealand gets at least one afternoon game. Clearly the Blues like that concept. So they've got three of their home games are afternoon games, which is a good thing, I think, for them. A couple of teams obviously miss out on some home games because of that super round, because there are only 14 rounds. I would have thought you'd do 15 rounds and then you have one round that is, or 13 rounds and have one round that is the super round rather than losing a home game. But there you go. We have a Friday and a Saturday night game at 7 p.m. every week, which is good to see. For us, it means we can just set our clocks and just tune in and know we've got a game to watch. I don't think that's quite the same for Australia with that same regularity. I think that's a good idea to have that regular slot that you know the game's going to be on. You can forget about who's actually playing. You just know I'm going to be on Friday night and watch a game. So that kind of thing is good. It is what it is. Finally, then, we've got some World Rugby Awards, the nominees. So the coach of the year is going to be between Dave Rennie, Simon Middleton, Ian Foster, and then Alan Bunting and Corey Sweeney as a joint nomination there for those two. I think a few of us in New Zealand will be scratching our heads at Ian Foster getting nominated there, boys.
Good record.
Well,
that's probably what they look at.
That's exactly right, Corn. I think statistically, and I'm only purely looking at it from statistics. I mean, you know, it was 91% win ratio, won the championship. You can't argue from a statistical point of view. And then you look at Dave Rennie and the Wallabies.
They made a decision.
Rennie's lost three against the Wallabies, and now he's dropped another two games, and he could very well lose another one. So, I mean, how on earth then statistically is Dave Rennie there? So, to me, it's a very difficult question to answer because the qualitative factors clearly come into play as well. But based on what I'm seeing now, I would actually look at the English Roses women's coach and actually throw whoever's coaching right in there, because clearly that's where the improvements have come in and the consistency. So to me, it's a bit of a head scratcher, really. I actually think there should be no.
Yeah, that's Simon Middleton. He's nominated, right? So there we go. I don't think Dave Rennie or Ian Foster got a chance. I think it's either going to be Simon Middleton, who is the England women's head coach, 15s head coach, or Alan Bunting and Corin Sweeney, who are the Black Ferns sevens head coach for the Olympic gold medal. So I think it's going to be one of those two will win it. I think Dave Rennie and Ian Foster are there just making up numbers. In all honesty, for that one.
I would have thought Wayne Pivex, with his turnaround between last year and the Six Nations win, is probably, you know, up there. I guess it depends when they made the decision, because did they make the Ian Foster decision before the weekend just been? Because it would look actually like a very good season. And it's kind of almost a first season, you know. Like, I think last year, you know, sort of. I mean, there's probably a bit more rugby up north. But, Wayne Pivek sort of seems like, because he was written off, wasn't he? And then it wasn't an amazing Six Nations win, but, you know, shit, it was a Six Nations win, so.
It was Six Nations win, but it was the jam slam with a number of red cards and stuff the opposition got, etc. So look, it wasn't a resounding win by any stretch of the imagination, and that's totally stolen from the Attacking Scrum podcast folks. Great fans of theirs, was on one of their shows recently as well. So my destination for all things Welsh rugby. But yeah, as I say, I think Dave Rennie and Ian Foster, they're making up numbers. Simon Middleton. Basically England 15s or the Black Ferns 7s should win that one. The breakthrough player of the year, Will Jordan, who was dropped for not following the game plan and then reselected. Andrew Kellaway, who I think has had a cracking season for the Wallabies until he was moved to 15. Lewis Rees-Zammit, obviously a young guy who went on the Lions tour but didn't get selected for the Test matches. And Marcus Smith, who also ended up on the Lions tour as an injury replacement as well there. Look, it's good to see that there are some really good young guns coming through, and I wouldn't mind any of those guys getting it personally. Anyone you think there's been missed?
I think, you know, there's been a bit of a cry about South Africans missing out, and I think
I'm going to get off that later.
Okay, I was just going to say, I think it's because, yeah, no, I'll let you get onto that. I think there are probably some players that have missed out. I think it has to be stringing some games together, and we're obviously biased. I think if Will Jordan wasn't in that play, we would have been quite, you know, pissed off. And perhaps that's fair because he's just had such an incredible try-scoring season. But, yeah, no one jumps to mind, but if I thought about it hard enough, I'd probably come up with a few Northern Hemisphere players.
Now, LB says, Lewis Rees-Zammit's only played 2 international games this year. Yeah, now, I guess one of the problems we have, and it's not clear, is when does the year start and when does it finish? Because as these are being announced now, with clearly the last round of games won't have been included. So I would guess that the November internationals from last year are included, and none of these ones in this window are, which gets it to be, as you say, was Imposter announced before or after he lost to Ireland? Well, clearly before. So it's all a bit messy, and doesn't really help that year. LB reckons it's a normal calendar year. I can't see how it can be. Seems a bit strange. But anyway, if that's how it is, that's how it is. Sevens player of the year, and I'll be honest, this is not an area I've got any information on. So, Napoloni, Bolaka of Fiji, and also Jutta Wanakwolo of Fiji, Scott Curry of New Zealand, and Marios Montoya of Argentina. Now, I do remember an Argentinian player doing very well at the Olympics, so not surprised by that. I say I can't comment on those. If you guys can, then feel free. Otherwise, I'll jump straight on to the women's sevens player of the year.
Wanakwolo, no question. Statistically, if you look at all his work rate, meters covered, his head and shoulders above. Scott Curry did well. He'll probably come a distant second, but yeah, Wanakwolo by a country mile in daylight.
Moving on to the women's ones then, Anseli Sifioni of France, Sarah Hanini of the Black Ferns, and then two more Fijians in here, Ripi Ulutunsua and Aloisi Nakosi. Now, again, sorry about the pronunciations there, folks, for that one, for those two there. But again, I can't comment. Boa, any insights there as to who you think is going to get it?
Not a lot of information. So the only obvious pick there is the local girl, the Black Fern. But to be frank, I don't want to disrespect the others by making that comment. So I don't have enough information to make that call.
Moving on to the women's player of the year on the 15 side, and unsurprisingly, two players from England, two players from France, Zoe Aldcroft and Poppy Cleal, and then Caroline Bouchard and Lorraine Sansus there in that one. Again, our ignorance is with this one. Well done to whoever wins that one. And then, as Con says, look, the first time since 2004, I think it is, that New Zealand have not had an All Black has not been nominated, and there are none of the Lions Tour winning South African Springboks nominated for Men's Player of the Year. So, yes, real strange ones there. As you say, the All Blacks, as we've said, coming into this, only lost one game before these nominations were made, maybe two. The Springboks, as we said, beating the Lions held world number one. So the top two teams in the world have no nominees for World Player of the Year. Interesting. And I'll be honest, actually, we've got Antoine Dupont, who I think is recognised as being the best scrum half in the world, obviously of France. Maro Itoje of England and the British and Irish Lions. Michael Hooper from the Wallabies, who's been ever present, and then Samu Karevi, who, look, is arguably the best 12 in the world, but how many games has he actually played before disappearing off? So a bit of a strange one there for me with Samu Karevi. Look, as I say, arguably the best 12 in the world in international rugby, but I just don't think he's played enough games in that one, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. Look, it's a bit of a joke, really. I mean, this is a bit of a joke. There's two players in my mind who really should be there and missing. Siya Kolisi from the Springboks and Jordy Barrett from the All Blacks. For me, those are the two standout players. And I think I'm tipping more towards Siya Kolisi purely because of his work rate and his ability to have captained the Springbok side, you know, against the Lions, a victory against them. And, of course, his exploits in the recent past, you know, really bringing that team up, and particularly his work rate. So, to me, apart from DuPont, everyone else is just, a real question mark.
I'll disagree with that. I think Michael Hooper deserves to be there. I think he's been cracking for Australia and arguably the best seven or best out there. Mario Toji, I could probably pick two locks I would have ahead of him in a World 15, to be honest with you. So to have him in there, yes, he's a very good player, but I don't think he's been, I'm not sure that he should be there. I think him and Karevi, Toji and Karevi, I don't think deserve to be there. And as you say, definitely Siya Kolisi. And if we're looking at the All Blacks, as you say, Jordy Barrett's probably had the most consistent season out of anybody. But I mean, you've also got another Lucy in Quagga Smith has been fantastic for the Springboks. Ludiaga totally turned round the Springboks line out against the against British and Irish Lions as well. So I mean, yeah, there's a number of players there in the Springboks I think should be there. But Toji and Karevi, I just don't get it.
I wonder if they're using that's the problem of there's a bit of recency bias. I mean, did a Toji have a great Six Nations and it's just I watched a lot of the games, I just couldn't tell you. So I wonder if they go back a bit.
He can't have had too great a one because England came second last.
They did, but Australia haven't done all that well. Well, no, I suppose the Australia, those two players, you know, are probably there due to those two wins against South Africa. Recently, you know, that those games went really well.
And a series win over France. Well, Karevi only played five games, so I don't think he was in the France games, no.
Yeah. Look, don't get me wrong. Hooper had a great game, but if you look at match winners for Australia, it was, you know, Quade Cooper.
He could have been.
You know, so I mean, you know, so where do you draw the line? And of course, the Wallabies got absolutely walloped by the All Blacks. So based on that logic, you know, I don't think Hooper deserves to be there. From an individual point of view, if you look at his work rate. Yes, no question about it, world class. But with the overall picture, so based on that, if you look at what Jordy Barrett did for the All Blacks, particularly, you know, meaning that, you know, let's face it, he's been head and shoulders above overall statistics, points scored, and Siya Kolisi. And for me, I think there's no question Siya Kolisi should be the player of the year.
So a lot of head scratching around that one. I think I saw somewhere that it's going to be a public vote as well to see who wins it, which to me makes it basically a farcical award from that.
How did they come up with that? Is that not a population vote, basically?
Essentially, yes. But it does seem to be, this way it gets confusing because there is a World Men's 15s Player of the Year voting panel, and then there's also a Vote Now button, which lets you vote about a lot of these things. So I'm not sure if it's just if there's a popular vote and an actual winner, or just to see whether the population agree with the experts, or whether those experts were just done to create the shortlist. We'll have to wait. I don't know about that one. Let's hope it's not a public vote because it does make a bit of a farce out of the whole thing if they do go down that route. We've lost Boa. We've run over time. So thank you very much, Boa, who has a split off for joining us. Thank you, Con, as it's got very dark where you are. And you're looking like you're out of a some kind of Queen Mamma Mia, Queen sort of video where they just have the head showing and they're singing away. Anyway,
some weird art. Yeah, no, fair pill.
Weird art. Yes, clearly you're on some interesting pills. Thank you everybody who joined us in the live chat. Don't forget you can also listen to the podcast as well as search for New Zealand Sport Radio. And become a supporter of New Zealand Sport Radio at patreon.com/NZ Sport Radio.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.